Slime Wire. Choose your own adventure.
As you must be aware of by now, today at 4:59 Eastern Time, disaster of global proportions. Bear with us as we continue to try to bring you updates on the latest events around the world. This is WNN's continuous global coverage of what can only be described as the greatest disaster or possibly attack in human history. It's uncertain what has brought about the catastrophic events we're witnessing. There is still no explanation forthcoming. It seems that all efforts around the globe are aimed at trying to control and stabilize the situation.
Slime Wire. Choose your own adventure.
All right, word. All right, mahalo. Welcome to the Slime Wire podcast. This is episode 2844, baby. I'm your host, Triton T2, here with my co-host, Ikemen Sensei, and we have a very special guest joining us. So a warm welcome for Christ of Business Casual.
Hi. Yes. Hello.
What's up? And you just released your new album, AD, as well. How long ago did that come out?
About a month ago now. Came out the 4th of April.
Okay, word. So my first question, since you're of the inter-elite of Vaporwave and we're sort of on the outskirts, is, you know, how much do they talk about us? Do they know about us? Do people hate us or do they love us?
Yes. I think some people are certainly aware of you. Randy, 3D Blast wanted to say hi.
Oh, word. Yeah. Shouts out 3D Blast. We love 3D Blast.
Yes. Big fan of 3D Blast.
Well, I mean, that's probably, he's like, they're cool guys. They're fans of me. So.
Hell yeah.
Say hi to them for me.
Word. And yeah. we're also huge fans of your stuff, personally.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah. I've been following you.
It was a shock to hear that.
Oh, no. I think you're actually like one of the better like people that's been going on for a long time, because I was into you before No Lives Matter came out too, and like all your early stuff, and then when No Lives Matter came out, that, and I showed that to Ikemen Sensei when it came out, and it blew us away. We thought it was like truly like next level, and I think that was like a weird era of vaporwave where like people were just sort of dropping next level shit. Nobody really knew where like the scene was going at that time.
Yeah, you know? For sure.
I mean, it was certainly a different time than it is right now.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so I guess first off, like with the new album, if you just want to give us like an overview of like, I know there's like a big concept behind it, and I know you did the Q&A, which I haven't gotten to listen to, but Ikemen Sensei, you listened to a little bit of it, right?
Yeah, I did. So, and I think on there, Christ, you detailed the idea that it's about purgatory, and it's split into roughly split into halves, where the first half is you're trying to find somebody who's been taken up into purgatory. The second half, the hell tracks, the hell sequence, is about you being sad and frustrated that you couldn't find the person before they got into purgatory. That's kind of the general gist of like the layout of the album.
Yeah, well, the lay of the album, yeah. I mean, it starts off with the first track where you get this a voicemail from somebody. They just wanted to call him back. It's important, but, you know, but the thing is, it's meant to symbolize the sort of, you know, people move away, people grow up, people grow distance over time. So you don't always know when the last time you'll see somebody is. So, or hear their voice or something like that. So in that moment, it's more so to be like the first track and a half is pretty much like right up to where worldwide event happens, whether it's the rapture, whether it's something else happens. And
has the worldwide event been revealed yet, or is that still a secret?
Well, I mean it's the rapture. In the concept of the album, it's supposed to be the rapture, but it's also supposed to be like a sort of this decade so far.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, for sure. I
think a lot of things have happened in the past 2 years, all 2-3 years already. So
yeah, I think it's something that you really like capture really great on this album. And I think in your past albums, starting with No Lives Matter, there's like a real like topical or like current events kind of like theme going on. But yeah, you capture the sense of like ongoing disaster that's happening out there in the real world, and then how that relates to the individual artist, the emotions of you as you are making the album, and like the emotions of the listener. I think the surface of the album is like, yeah, it's like a purgatory theme. But we also gather that there's like a secret event, like some sort of secret event from your personal life that was the inspiration for this album. And I was wondering, so is there like, if you listen to this album enough, are there clues within the album that can help us reveal the theme?
I hate to say it. It's not that something had happened. It's the fear that something may happen that has sparked off this sort of concept.
That's very interesting. We've actually talked previously on like different episodes of this podcast about how we felt like there wasn't very much good art coming out of like the COVID era that directly sort of referenced it or referenced to that sort of general fear and anxiety that people were having. One album we both really liked was the Charlie XCX, How I'm Feeling Now one. I think that's like really the only thing that like really was specifically sort of about like lockdowns and quarantine and like general fear and anxiety, like that was good. So it's cool that you're doing something sort of similar.
I mean, I think, like I was saying earlier, the at least the first half of the album, the first segment is supposed to be that moment where you missed somebody before, like things like you had the chance to say goodbye, but you didn't pick up the phone.
Uh-huh.
And on the other end of that, you're at the end, tail end of that first half, where you hear the recording on the other end of that.
Yeah.
They didn't get your message either. It was too late by that point.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you didn't get to say goodbye, and I at either in person or whatever. It's not something that necessarily has happened to me recently. You know, I've already sort of touched upon that topic in other albums. Mm-hmm. But in this one specifically, you know, it for me, it was the underlying fear of this whole thing. Cause you know, I remember calling my mom up, cause she's, you know, I live two states over. So, you know, not like it's not a hop and a skip. So maybe you should stock up. Maybe you should, you know, stay home. Maybe you shouldn't cause like in my mind, you know, this is like early days of COVID, and it's like, what's going on here? What's happening? What is this that's going on?
Yeah.
And how bad is it? How deadly is it? You hear all this shit on the news.
Oh, for sure.
And it gets into your head a little bit, and you get that sort of fear that, you know, you start calling your, you know, friends and family more often. Because of something like that.
But in this case,
he didn't get the chance to do that.
Yeah, for sure.
He came and went to Japan right before COVID started and like still hasn't been able to come back to America.
Seriously. Yeah. I lived in an abandoned building, or not an old abandoned house that was renovated for me, like on the top of a mountain in the middle of nowhere in Japan. And then 6 months after I moved there, COVID happened. So I definitely relate to the idea of distance, like between you and your loved ones. All you really have to like figure out what's going on is like a digital medium, and you're trying to get to them and you don't know if you're going to be able to get to them. And like that has happened to me multiple times throughout COVID, where like I will get like a missed call from my like one of my family members, and there's like a feeling of like, oh shit, like what if they have like bad news and I didn't pick up, you know? So I think that's a very, like, that's a really relatable theme for a lot of people that are listening to you now. So yeah, I definitely understand that general feeling.
I mean, like, I try to leave it as much up to interpretation as possible, because,
yeah,
you know, I don't want to color somebody's, you know, perspective of an album. Like I told myself I wasn't going to, you know, go into too depth on this, you know, but but the other thing is, like, I feel like people don't necessarily see it so much. They think it's one thing, and the thing is, like, it's good they're thinking outside of the box, but it's not necessarily what I was thinking with it. So sometimes it's like, I want to push them in the right direction, but I also want to, I don't know.
Yeah,
it's the dichotomy of, you know, it's the world's music now. It's no longer mine. I put it out there.
Yeah, so, you want people to have their own like interpretations, but
exactly.
I think a lot like this album and a lot of your other music ends up being like really, I don't know, current events themed. And I was wondering, is that something that you go into trying to make, or is that like a result of like the source material that you mine from?
I think the last album I made, how I was like currently feeling, was maybe New Wounds.
Really, really, that was like the last personal album.
Wasn't it? New Wounds was like the first album that like I really like tried to do something a little different, and I was like, I was in college at that point. Things were starting to pick up. I was stressed. Yeah. I was, you know, doing stuff, and that felt like a very of my time when I was making that album. That's what that was. Yeah. I was like sampling the music I was listening to at that point, although I do that all the time.
Sure.
But No Less Matter is about earlier time. Deep Dark Trench is about a time that I lived through, but it wasn't a current time. So it's just whatever is about a time when I was younger, reminiscing, you know, Alone Online, you know, I guess Alone Online was sort of, I did really, maybe it was a premonition I had.
Because totally.
I don't think I really felt that way that I portrayed the album as until after well into COVID. Like, I don't think it's been told recently that album has really, really felt like my life, and it's really kind of depressing.
So, yeah, definitely.
And that one came out in April 2020. So were you working on that like a long time before COVID?
The album was done in January.
Oh, word. Damn.
Well, it was mostly done January. I had a couple more stragglers into February, but it was done before COVID happened. That's why I said I felt like a premonition, you know, perfect timing, you know, album about, you know, losing yourself to the internet and being stuck online. I put that out the week that everybody goes into lockdown. Great. Great job, John.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you got to stop making such dark albums if you have that power, you know.
Well, the thing is, it's I clearly, you know, I'm not really a sad or dark person, you know.
Yeah.
To have fun. I think it's just for me, sometimes it's so much easier to tell a interesting story when there's stakes in it, you know.
Mm-hmm. For sure. I was really surprised when I was watching your Q&A on Twitch that you were as jovial as you were. I was expecting coming on here and meeting the darkest
person. Brooding artist, you know.
No,
totally.
I think it's my life has been good, and my life experiences, you know, have been varied. I've had my goods, my ups, my downs, but you know, all in all, I'm living a good life, and I don't really have too much to be sad about. And so I'm not sad very often, but you know, sometimes I guess I get that out of my music a little bit, you know, or I think I'm just maybe good at crafting that sort of sound, or maybe sad people just like to listen to it, you know.
is the music that you typically enjoy happy or sad? Cause I know a lot of business casual releases are pretty happy and pretty funky, you know?
It varies really. There's a handful of artists I listen. The thing is, I think the one thing I really enjoy about music is a dissonance to it. You know, if there's some sort of a little bit of an undertone of something that's darker, maybe a little more, not necessarily edgy, but you know, something's not quite right. It's a little off kilter. You know, and then there's other artists that I listen to that, you know, aren't just kind of I was really, I think it was almost 2 years ago. There's an Eliza Compton album that I was listening to a lot that year. And that really sort of influenced a lot of the sort of sounds I was doing, especially with the Father 2006 stuff, 2021, 2020. I can't remember now. It all melts together at this point.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
I don't know. I listened to, I went, the thing is again, like I said, I wouldn't say it's happy, but it's you know, it's got some movement to it, you know, it's got some, you know, but it's weird. When you say happy, it's would you call Death's Dynamic Shroud happy music?
No, I mean, sometimes Death's Dynamic Shroud is sad, I think, but yeah, sometimes there's some bliss in there sometimes.
I don't know. There's
It is interesting. It's weird.
There is a certain sound that I have an ear for.
Mm-hmm.
And it's I feel like I'm the only one who tends to have it around me, and it's really kind of depressing. Yeah, like all my IRL friends are listening to like 2012 playlists they made in college, and I'm over here, you know, listening to fucking whatever I'm listening to. It's just, oh man.
Well, is a lot of your listening like just going through like demos for Business Casual and that sort of stuff?
No, not so. Well, things like I do get a lot of demos for Business Casual, but only a handful really get through to the, you know.
You just like you stop after like a couple songs, yeah.
Well, if I'm not feeling it at all, or if I like it's,
yeah, yeah.
If it's like, you know, someone's like first foray into it, or if it's like something that's completely unrelevant, you know, to what Business Casual is, you know, then yeah, I'll usually just stop. But you know, the weird thing is it's this being online a lot, being, you know, at home a lot, I feel like I'm listening to less music than I was beforehand. Because I would, you know, on my phone, put a bunch of songs on it and just go out and listen to them while I'm out, but I'm not out as much as I used to be.
Oh yeah. I think with like streaming services too, like I remember like I used to just download everything and then put it on my phone, and then that gives you a reason to like listen to it. And then exactly. if you have everything at your fingertips, it's hard to choose something.
I've just been falling into like old favorites, and you know,
yeah.
And it's like, it's not a good thing. It's like, I go to the flea market every week, and I used to play, okay. When I was younger, I used to play TF2 all the time on the Xbox, right? And they used to have a built-in music player. They could like put stuff, music on the hard drive and play it off that while you're playing a game.
Oh, word, yeah, yeah.
I had a Jackson as computer band, I think that was Smash. That was basically my TF2 soundtrack.
Yeah.
Now my soundtrack to going to the flea market every week is the Caps admin. It's basically his entire SoundCloud. I basically downloaded every track from his SoundCloud, put it into an album, and put it on my phone. This is before it got put on Spotify, but like, you know, I'll just play the same thing whenever I'm like in a space or when I'm doing a certain something, you know.
Yeah, I definitely get that. And I also think that my like, when you are locked into your home for so many hours of the day, you have like a content overdose, and then you can only really handle the stuff that you were already into before the pandemic. But I was listening to your Q&A, and you were talking about your process of going out like Shazamming stuff that you find like everywhere. And I think that's like such a weird like inversion of like, you were talking about like the difference between Vaporwave and Plunderphonics and how Vaporwave kind of took up the mantle of that. And it's like such a different gathering process of like finding stuff to sample than like a Plunderphonics artist would do. And I was wondering, like, now that you, has the pandemic like affected your ability to find like wild shit that you would not have thought to use before? Like it, before you heard it somewhere out in the wild?
It varies. Sometimes like I would go out and I would find like cassette tapes at the thrift store or what have you, or I'd go, but the thing is like ever since I got a smartphone and whatever like built it, whatever was built into Windows Phone back in the day, Cortana or something, I used that and then Shazam after that. But I've been using that since like 2011, 2012, you know, just for finding stuff, because it's such a, because the thing is like, I don't listen to like the radio, I don't listen to pop music. So whenever I hear anything out in the wild that like hits me.
Yeah.
You know, that's, and the thing is like, you're not going to walk up to like the employee of the, you know, thing like, what's that song playing?
Yeah. Yeah. Like Fred Meyer.
It is such a amazing tool to have. And I think it's like sometimes you'll go out, I'll be at the record store and they have something weird playing. Instead of being awkward, I actually go up there, ask them what's playing, and they may not even know because they got something going on. Sure. So I just put it on the Shazam, and another cool thing is sometimes you put it on Shazam and you'll get something different from what it is. So it gives you, so it maybe sounds very song. Similar.
Well, yeah, exactly. Or something that like sampled it or something.
Exactly. Yeah. So then you can go down more rabbit holes. I mean, like when I get into a rabbit hole, I'll dig for a while. But sometimes it's been I guess it's been harder for me to get into rabbit holes lately. I mean, right at the very tail end to finish up this album, the last like two tracks I was trying to finish on here, like I think took like 2 or 3 months because at that point I was just getting like, I couldn't figure out what would like fit into the segment I was working on. But like before that, I was like banging out tracks, you know.
I love that you sampled that Wilson Phillips song because I love that song.
Wilson Phillips.
Which song is that? It's on. It's in the Hell series. It's fucking. Why do you look yourself up in these chains?
That's a great song. Okay. Yep. Well, the thing is, like, I had to really mess with that sample, and it still didn't work because it got picked up by the YouTube. It's one of the only samples on the album that's like, I wasn't able to finesse enough. Like, that's why it sounds a little bit more tinny than some of the other samples in there, because I really tried to figure out how to get it so it didn't do that. Because the thing is, like, it works in the context of the album as far as like storytelling and sonically, it kind of works. But I just had a hard time trying to get it so it wouldn't get picked up by the
copyright guard. Yeah, are you ever worried about that since you mostly just sample? Yeah.
I mean,
and I'm sure your label, just like that whole body of work, has tons of samples on it, you know.
Yeah, I try not to think about it, to be honest.
For sure.
Cause if it happens, it happens. And you know, there's not much I can do about it.
You know. Yeah. So with like, you running
Go ahead.
Oh no, go for it.
I was gonna say, like, I'm not gonna say this, but I know the risks in doing what I do, and part of me doesn't care so much.
Yeah,
like, I mean, I business casual is my job right now, but my own music, it would really suck, but if you know, I gotta. C&D, you know, I do what I have to do, you know, because I'm not stupid, you know. I know the law.
Yeah, well, if you get hit with a lawsuit, I mean, with the billions of dollars you're making off business casual, you can just settle out of court, probably.
Pay off
probably
some lawyers.
I mean, tapes only pay for so much these days.
That is what I was going to ask you, is if business casual is like your job, like your source of income, because if so, that's like really impressive. You're probably one of very few people that have made a living off of this vaporwave shit, you know?
I mean, I've gotten lucky.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you're also like the longest, you're probably the longest running label at this point, right?
Maybe consistently running label, but I'm sure there's older ones that are like on and off, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like Illuminated Paths or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like, it'll be nine years in on Monday.
Oh wow, damn.
I think Monday.
That's cool. Are you planning something Tuesday. For the 10th anniversary?
I'm thinking through it in my head, but I'm not quite there yet. I'm still focusing on trying to get stuff for June, July set up. So I mean, thinking that far ahead is a little much.
Yeah, so I listened to only a little bit of the Q&A, but the part that I did get to was you were talking about how the second half of this new album is sort of meta about like vaporwave and the like vaporwave sort of dying. And we've definitely talked about that on our show. And since you run this like super huge label and you're getting all these demos in all the time, like you're like sort of a unique person that would be able to tell if you felt like the genre was dying. Is that something you think about a lot?
Oh, it's something I've been thinking about since 2014, you know? Oh,
yeah, for sure.
Well, I mean, like in 2014, I'm thinking of this like chill wave, witch house, ocean grunge. That wasn't I was just coming in at that point. C-punk, whatever. Yeah. But like how those like came, went real quick. I love Vaporwave, and I don't think I'll ever really stop caring about it. But I Glory Days is certainly well past us at this point. I think there needs to be a shift in viewers. But the, my thought of the matter is new people coming in, they're not going to come to Vaporwave. They're going to make their own thing, just like we did. And then they're going to focus on that. Because they're not going to care about this. You know, we did this. This was our thing.
That's true.
And they don't want to have anything part of it because, you know, cringe millennials, you know?
Yeah, we have become cringe.
I mean, it's true. I mean, I hate to say it, you know, I watch a couple YouTubers that like, clearly, I mean, I'm into like thrift shopping and flea marketing and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
I buy and sell stuff online every once in a while. So every once in a while, I watch these like YouTubers, like they go game hunting or whatever. And these are the biggest fucking cringe lords I've ever seen. Like I literally, it makes me sick I'm in tune with my childhood, you know, but at the same time, I grew up, my tastes grew up.
Yes.
The fact that you have an entire room dedicated to fucking Ninja Turtles and fucking and like Saturday morning cereal. I mean, like fucking grow the fuck up.
Yeah.
Fucking life.
That is such a crazy. It is very dispiriting to see like my generation become like these, like, I don't know, pack rats of like just collecting.
Of just culture and like bad culture.
I'm not gonna lie. I am very much that myself, to be honest.
No, I am too. Yeah.
Like I've got a ton of old phones. I've got a ton of old games and stuff lying around the apartment. I've got too much shit. But that's the thing. That is our generation. And unfortunately, I mean, probably not unfortunately, but fortunately, you know, we're the last of it. So
the next they could
next generation. Well, I think it's already here in the form of hyperpop and the form of whatever what is it called?
Like Drain Gang.
the sort of drain twang crowd, you know. Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, there's a certain sound that a lot of like teenagers and kids are into these days that, you know, we're just not going to be able to really get into ourselves because we're old.
Yeah.
I say that as a 28 year old. I'm not like technically old, but like as far as like internet music goes, I mean,
we're ancient.
Time flies. Yeah. We've been around the block for a while, you know?
Yeah. For sure.
And again, I don't think Vaporwave is going to be dead tomorrow. But I it's part of the reason why I'm starting to look into other avenues of things for myself. I got the TikTok, I got the NFTs, you know, other stuff, you know, that I'm trying to do as well.
So again, on the on the Q&A, you mentioned that you were big on TikTok now, and I have no idea what that's about. So, like, what?
Oh yeah, Christ is big on TikTok. He's got thousands of viewers on TikTok.
What's your TikTok game? Are you like,
I post funny little skits, and I sometimes do trends. Like, I take, you know, whatever the trending sound is, and I'll do something with it. You know.
Okay, and this viewership that you have basically has no idea of your.
Some of them know that I do music, some of them, you know, are aware of it, but to be honest, it's hard to get people from TikTok anywhere else, you know.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
they're stuck in the app, just like people on Instagram, you know. Yeah. It's hard to get them off the app, so it's basically like useless followers, you know. Every like 5,000 TikTok followers is like 500 Twitter followers, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
So yeah, it's like
I was wondering about like Back on the topic of like millennials being pop culture like magpies or whatever and spending all their money on Funko Pops. Like,
oh God.
I think it's interesting because one of the many hills that we regularly die on here at SlimeWire is like the pack ratification, the Redditification of like Vaporwave in the form of like a huge part of Vaporwave now is people collecting like tapes and records and stuff kind of in the same way that they do like Funko Pops, you know? And so like a huge part of it now has become this scene, like in the same way that there is like a scene of like retro game enthusiasts that mostly exists on the internet, just trading stuff back and forth, trading old games back and forth. That kind of seems to be like a weird like double-edged sword that Vaporwave has run into now, where it's like a lot of artists by selling tapes online have found a revenue stream, but at the same time it has made this it has made Vaporwave into that kind of culture.
I'm definitely an interesting position to talk about that as a topic. I mean, well, things like, yes. I definitely see where you're coming from on that, and it was to an extent, yeah, that's very much true. But I think it's more so stems from the vinyl record type of person. Well, I mean, yeah. But then again, that is the same person who'll buy a fucking Funko Pop. God.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. God. Yeah. Well, now that you say that, now I'm just like. And I feel dirty.
I don't want to bring down your day, and you know you got to do what you got to do.
I've got old friend that I went to his place, and he had like an entire shelf of those Funko Pops, and I was like, I like made fun of him for it, and he was like, "Man, you don't understand. I'm selling these things on the internet. I'm making tons of money off this." And then I went back, like,
get rid of them.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I went back like a year later, and he still had all of them. So I don't think he was selling them. I think he just lied to me.
Sure. Yeah, I've got my old GameCube collection. I need to get rid of that like now before the market tanks.
Oh yeah.
No,
yeah.
Well, the thing is I just never got rid of a lot of this stuff. You know, So I mean I remember getting like half those games like at GameStop, buy two, get two free, you know?
Yeah,
when they were like closing out on them, and now they're like $40-$50 a pop, and I'm like, are you fucking SpongeBob Battle for Bikini Bottoms, like a $20 game, fucking win.
Yeah, you got to get rid of them before they release the GameCube emulator on Switch, which is just an inevitability, I think.
Oh well, it's not coming to Switch. You got to be like, I mean, Nintendo's really, really fucking pulling it, milking it for all it's got, you know, they won't do it until they absolutely have to.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, we won't see it till like Switch 2, like halfway through the Switch 2's life.
Yeah, you're right.
We'll be lucky if we get Game Boy or anything like that this generation.
Well, fingers crossed. Yeah, I don't know. I do understand, like especially being in Japan when I first got here, like going into like any like used bookstore, they have all of these like, I don't know, rare games that I read about when I was like reading Nintendo Power as a 12-year-old, and like thought, oh man, that would be so cool if that game came to the States. And I just go there and they have it now, and you buy it, and like on the shelf it's like glimmering, and it's like this cool thing that you, like this cool legendary thing that you never knew, you never thought you would actually see. And then you buy it and it's like, yeah, this is just a Game Boy Advance cartridge. Like, it's not even that good of a game.
Yeah, I mean, if we're talking about, like, rare things, not rare things, but, like, things that, like, glimmer. Yeah. I was at a convention back, like, 2017.
Yeah.
And I picked up a Virtual Boy with the Blockbuster box and a ton of games for, like, $100. And that was a lot at the time. Like, I was thinking, like, I think I worked down from like $150 to $100.
Damn.
Because it was like, you know, end of the first day, it's like, yeah, I can get rid of this quick.
Yeah, for sure.
The box alone now is like $500, and I'm like, I really want to get rid of it, but the other part of me is like thinking, It's sitting in my closet collecting dust right now. Yeah, I don't dare pull it out and play it because you know those things are.
Yeah, $500. That is wild.
Is that
eBay? That's for the case.
Oh damn! Is this like on eBay or like Facebook Marketplace or?
I mean, I'm probably on eBay.
Oh, word.
I mean, it's been a while since I last checked, so it's probably gone down. I probably checked at the height of it, you know.
Yeah. Weird. To bring it back, like to the album.
Let's get back.
Yeah, sorry, that was a digression.
It's perfect. You're actually like we're like exactly the same age, so we understand a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, I'm actually the oldest in the room right now, so. Godspeed to you, youngins. You're the future. but anyways, bring it back, Triton.
Where do you think this new album stands up like to your previous works? Like, is this your best album, you think?
I think it's my most mature album. I've gotten to a point where I thought I got there with Deep Dark Trench, which is why I partially felt comfortable doing something a little bit different.
Yeah.
But I feel like this is probably the height of where I've gotten my craft as far as like thematically and sonically.
Mm-hmm. And how do you think
I don't know if it's my best.
Do you think
it's fairly better than the last time I put out, at least by comparison.
I want to listen to Alone Online again, actually, because I haven't listened to it in a while. But recently over this year, I've gotten into James Ferraro a lot. And I heard that was a big influence on that one.
You think it's like everybody kept like saying it was James Ferraro. And like, sure, there's definitely an influence there. But I've always wanted to make an orchestral sounding album, you know, even when I was a kid, you know, because I was very much into... I was into two types of music when I was young. I was into like the sort of 70s, 80s pop, and I was into classical.
Uh huh.
Really?
You know, my father was, you know, would play, you know, he had like a ton of like classical music CDs. Unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to figure out what they all were because they were gone by the time I cared about them.
Yeah.
But my mom also, my dad would listen to classical music, my mom would listen to like pop. So I got a little bit of both. And I think part of it is I've always wanted to make something like that. And, you know, it's not like I can go out to the local symphony and say, hey, play this.
Yeah,
I do not have the budget nor the talent for that. They'd probably be like, you wanted to play two notes for like 20 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay, sure.
Yeah. You have enough money to afford a B flat and an F, and that's it. Yeah. Well, so Alone Online was your stopgap solution to not being able to afford an entire symphony.
Yeah, it's something I've always really wanted to do, and I felt like it was the right time. A lot of people, this is right off the heels of Econ, and this is, again, before COVID happened, because we're all thinking, it's all up from here. You know, things were good, things were at their all-time, maybe not the all-time high, but like Vaporwave was like back.
Yeah.
That's how it felt at the end of 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of my friends were shifting towards original stuff so they could actually market their music and not just, you know. So I was thinking, you know, I'll take this chance to go ahead and try something new and try this and do this.
Yeah.
And the world had other plans for me.
Well, I also, I think like given the context of like what you were trying to do with that album, because I will admit that I wasn't like the biggest fan when it first released, but I think that it's interesting that that kind of represented your attempt to move on from like, for lack of a better term, I'll call it like vanilla vaporwave, you know, sampled, slowed down vaporwave, because like in comparison to a lot of other vaporwave artists, gambits to move on sonically, it definitely is a very different a way to do that. And I think it also like sort of reflects the themes of your last album of your entire like discography of being like the version of like a real thing, except inside alone on your computer, making something in a DAW, like making like an entire symphony in a DAW. So that's pretty interesting. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was wondering if out of the various musicians that are trying to revamp their sound in order to reach a wider audience, then 2 years ago before the pandemic hit and now, what artists do you think are doing that like the most effectively and like the most interestingly?
To be honest, I listen to less Vaporwave than you might think.
Yeah, I would imagine so, yeah.
Because you can only tell you, I look at Vaporwave as a passion and as a job.
Yeah, for sure.
So I can only take, I'm like the critic from Ratatouille. If I don't like it, I don't swallow, you know? So if I don't like it, I stop listening, I go to something else,
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Gotcha. Why did I say that out loud?
That's a genius comparison. No, that is a brilliant metaphor, a beautiful metaphor. Because I don't know, I think here within the SlimeWire official opinion, I think that HKE is sort of doing the coolest, stuff that's trying to go beyond Vaporwave. But I was wondering.
I don't think he's classified himself as Vaporwave since 2014. Okay, you know,
that's fair.
I mean, to be plain honest, I follow HK very
we just love following him because he's so all the art that he puts out is so schizophrenic and it can go in a random direction at any possible time.
Well, I mean,
it's a really enigmatic artist to follow, but that's also why we follow you, honestly.
Yeah. True.
Oh God. Am I a schizophrenic?
No, yeah. But enigmatic, we never know where you're going to go.
Yeah, definitely.
There's an artist who I follow who's not necessarily the greatest person, but his music, he's put out 10 albums this year alone. And I think there's only been one or two duds in it. Ever heard of Verifeth?
No, I don't.
Haven't. No.
I knew him from the Breakbit, Raffle Tracks, YouTube Poop Music days,
The pre-Vaporwave days.
Pre-Vaporwave, 2009, 2010. Wow. But he's been he was originally really you've heard of Pogo from YouTube. He had the old Disney remixes and shit. If you type Pogo and you see one of his videos, you'll know what I'm talking about. But he had stuff like that in the early days. But then he started singing.
Nice.
And at first, the first things, I think the closest thing I can compare him to is a more crazed and desperate Thom Yorke.
Oh, cool.
He has a sound to it. I was talking to my friend the other day how he's an artist who just I feel very rarely misses, at least for me. There's something about his music that's just so raw and so interesting, intriguing, and the half time you can't even understand what he's saying, but it's the sound of his voice and the sound of the samples he uses that's so.
So this guy's
horrible.
Made,
he's a horrible person,
He's a bad person.
he's not a great. I won't say that. He's. I'm sure he's.
In what way? What crimes has he committed?
Has he murdered somebody?
Yeah. Is he a murderer?
No. He's just a problematic person. I'll say he's not a bad person. He's a problematic person.
Gotcha.
For sure.
Gotcha.
He's been banned off Twitter a couple times. I know that much for sure.
Okay.
Well,
yeah. Oh,
so,
nice. We've all been there.
Now I hope he doesn't listen to this because this would be awful.
Because like, don't worry, nobody listens to us.
I was.
Yeah. It'll be fine.
Well, either way. But like his music is just like somebody who I can listen to. Like he'll put out a new album, and I'll just like listen to it and be like, man, how does he do it?
Hell yeah.
You know.
After this, can you like?
I'll share a link.
Yeah, I want to get in on that. That weird, like the problematic, that word reminds me of like a time when I was working at some crappy job, and one of my coworkers was really into vaporwave, and we were, you know, we were swapping recs, and I mentioned your music. And he was like, "Oh no, I don't listen to that guy because of his recidivist social views. Because you named your album No Lives Matter and Social Justice, whatever." And I was like, "I'm pretty sure that that's just like a titles." Like,
yeah, I mean, they're meant to be inflammatory, you know.
Yeah. I think they're meant.
In retrospect, I wish I did something different. But at the same time, I it's something like that that keeps them lingering.
Yeah, for sure. I think that there is social commentary that's meant to, like, you know, meant to provoke that kind of like discussion and like that kind of the feeling of like
the thing is like it the album really had nothing to do with it. I think I just thought it was a cool name, just a cool name, and I was thinking like, yeah, and thing is, at the time I, you know, clearly I'm a dumb white kid from rural America. Yeah. So I mean, I wasn't as well informed as I probably should have been at that point. And had I known how
I mean, when did No Lives Matter come out?
It came out in 2016. This is post, you know, I think it's like I didn't really even hear about this sort of stuff until after November 2016, you know.
Yeah, sure.
And the reason why I named SJW what I did is because of all the people who were like, "Oh, why'd you name your No Lives Matter this?" And like, whatever, fuck you guys, because I'm stupid and young and dumb. Because I think it's like I'd already announced the title, like the anagram of it, like SJW.
Nice.
Because I was thinking, oh, maybe I should rename this. I was going to rename it to Forever Alone, which would have, you know, worked with the album cover.
But yeah, definitely.
F.A., I don't know. Mm.
Yeah, it's not as
catchy. Okay.
Wait, for what is the album cover of Social Justice Whatever? Because I know the Deep Dark Trench is a Chris Chan thing, right?
If you look up the Forever Alone meme,
yeah,
it's the tears.
Oh shit!
Oh,
damn!
Yeah,
I had no idea.
Mind blown! You just blew my mind there. Nice. Yeah, I was always wondering what those. I thought they were little. I thought they were little like earbuds. That's what I thought.
I could see that.
Yeah.
Damn, no, those are.
Like, yeah, I mean, I think all my covers, I think from 7 years later on, have like a deeper meaning to them.
Yeah, that is a cool aspect of your like album covers. They all have some kind of like hidden reality to them, or like a deeper meaning to them that you would not know from looking at it. And definitely like they all contain some kind of like internet lore that you think that you look at it and you think there's probably something like some kind of story behind this image, like especially on AD, like that house, having the album cover be a picture of that house, it just begs people to like be like, is that Christ's house, is that like
all the photos from that album's like promo and all the singles and stuff like that has been from thrift store cameras I found over the past year.
Oh, wow.
The past couple of years. So all these photos are like of, you know, just incidental photos that people have taken that I now have. And so, wild. Like, in the AD cover, I add the smoke to the background of it to, you know, And the thing is, like, the concept with the album cover throughout all of them has been this sort of, like, something is happening, something has just happened, you don't know what happened, but you can see the aftermath of it already, and it's, like, it hasn't quite hit home yet, you know?
Okay, some kind of disaster's happened, but you're not back at your house. You can see smoke trailing up from where your house should be, and you know some shit went down, but you're not back there yet.
Yeah.
Damn, yeah, that's wild. Yeah, shit.
Well, I was gonna ask, but I mean, you may have basically sort of already answered this, but so not only like where does this album stand up to your previous work, but do you like, we literally consider like what you're doing with the sort of classic vaporwave style is, we think it's like actually kind of next level, and do you ever like rate yourself as like next to the biggest people in vaporwave, like George Clanton, or even like, or like 3D Blast, or like your contemporaries, or like, is that a thing that
I see them all as contemporaries?
Okay,
I don't think I'm so far off either way to call myself better than most of my contemporaries.
But you think you've deserved your spot, though?
I've put in my time. And, you know, whether or not I have as much as I could to like, I'm trying to think of how to word this. I really don't know where I stand. Like, you know, you look at like, a group like DDS or like, I don't really think of George Clan as vaporwave anymore. I haven't thought of him as vaporwave probably since, like,
yeah, like since Slide or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, like, he's the Funko, you know, making stuff for vaporwave kids, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But like, it's something. You know, I'm probably whatever B tier Funko is, you know.
Definitely.
Well, you probably like have a bit of a relationship with him, right? Since you did both Econs, right?
I mean, he said, "Hey, if anyone wants to be in this, send us an email." I was like, "I'll throw my hat in the ring. What's the worst that could happen?" He said, "Yeah, because he probably recognized my name because I mean I've been around for a while."
Uh-huh.
Or maybe I emailed from the business casual email instead of my regular email intentionally.
Oh, hell yeah.
give us a little extra clout there, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because he's probably, if he hasn't heard me, he probably heard of business casual, you know?
Oh, for sure, yeah.
But, like, I don't know how I got picked out of the lineup for, like, to be on the second thing. I mean, I like the second round of people in at Econ 1, and then they basically just invite everybody else back for Econ 2, probably because it just would have been easier that way. But yeah, I hear there's an Econ 3 happening, and I haven't heard anything yet as far as the invite. So I don't think it's happening again. I think of probably, to be honest, I think a lot of people have lost faith or respect in me as an artist because of a number of things. I think because of my last album, Alone Online, as well as me getting into NFTs last year, a lot of people saw that and were like, on top of my more stupid decisions from like 2016, 2017, and album titles, you know, I think it all adds up to somebody who like, oh, he makes shitty music and he's into NFTs.
And he's an NFT guy. Yeah.
I mean, like, yeah, who wants to deal with this guy? And so I think a lot of people lost respect, man. And I get it. It's sad. I mean,
well, we never lost respect, Pete, right?
Yes.
I appreciate it. You know,
How has the reception to AD going, like, in general? Like, what are people saying about it? All I really know is that like I think Newsworms is your most popular track on Spotify, or no, it's Hell, one of your Hell.
No, that one was on a Spotify playlist, so that's the reason why that's up there.
Gotcha.
Newsworms is probably still the biggest one.
Okay, yeah. So what do you what has the reception been like for AD? Because I do agree with you that I think it's your most mature and like your most like progressed album, and it seems like there's a lot more thought and intentionality put into it than your previous stuff. So like, what have other people been saying about it to you?
To me personally, they've all been very nice. They've all been very positive. But of course, I'm on your music every once in a while, seeing when people are typing up about me or what star rating I've got, you know. Because I'm vain like that.
Yeah, you're Googling yourself. Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
Especially when I'm putting out something new. Yeah, you gotta Google yourself a couple times.
Yeah, yeah.
But it seems I'm certainly getting better reviews than I did on Load Online, so I'm happy for that. I feel like I really had to prove myself with this album because I had straight away and tried something new and which didn't quite work out. And so I really had to make sure this was something that was at least good enough to stand with the other albums I've put out in the past.
For sure.
And I don't know that everybody got enough from it. I think a lot of people, I felt gypped by the Hell segment. Although, really? I think a lot of people only saw it at face value. Or I think it's like, I mean, it's one of those albums that, like, with multiple listens and thought, you know. Yeah. You can figure it out.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, you know, I hate to say it, you know, people don't listen to albums. They listen to playlists. And
Sure.
I intentionally really tried to make this album as more accessible than some of my other stuff. Even when I was talking to my mom, because she listened to it, I didn't send her a link or anything. She just found it and listened to it. It's just like,
nice.
Chad, I think this is your best work yet, and I actually believed her, because normally she's
your blunt. Worst critic. Nice.
No, I mean, she's blunt.
Yeah, sure. Pinging off that, I was wondering, like, how long was the process of working on this album, and why did you choose to release it now? Was there like, I mean. Did you intentionally wait a long time between releasing Alone Online or?
Well, I mean, after I made Alone Online, I was sort of like, okay, this, the thing that I was banking on to be my new thing failed. So I have to start from scratch. COVID, this is also the year of COVID.
Yeah.
That came out. And at that time, I was also working on the last, Father 2006 album, which I guess that came out in the end of 2020.
Yeah, we listened to that one. Yeah, we put it. We reviewed it on our podcast. Yeah.
What did we say about it? Do you remember?
I think we said it was good.
Nice.
I'd have to go back, but yeah.
But like most of 2021, I'm not gonna lie, I wasn't in the best place. I had a hard time trying to figure out what I want to do with this next album. And it really did take up till like February of this year to like finish this album. Like I think the first track I started on was let me open up my files real quick. Because I could at least figure out, because I think the first track I was working on was the first one I finished was Never the Same. Okay. And that one was, I think, at the fall of 2020.
Oh, wow. So this has been year.
Well, that was like the first track I made. I was sort of like trying to figure out what I wanted to go from there.
Yeah.
And it took me a while to figure out what I wanted to do.
For
because
sure.
Like I the other thing is I hadn't found an album cover yet. Hadn't found the image Because like the image for the album comes usually pretty early in my process, because it helps me build a story around that feeling that you have in the image.
Definitely, yeah.
And I'm currently working on another project, and I have ideas for covers that are coming to me.
Yeah.
And I just have to either find the right image, or I have to get an artist to, you know, make something, or I make something myself, you know.
So I have a weird question that bounces off that, and I'm sorry to interrupt you. So would you say that like Deep Dark Trench was an album that was made? Did you find the album cover for Deep Dark Trench early on in the creative process?
Yeah. And very early.
Really? So Deep Dark Trench is very much influenced off of that image of Sonichu.
Deep Dark, the album cover is the comparison of their loss of innocence in going online, and America's loss of quote unquote innocence, even though you know
we never really had it to begin with.
Never really had it, but perceived innocence after 9/11. The sort of, you know, especially in that specific image that was used in the album, it was very much meant to be like a, you know, standing with our troops sort of thing. It was meant to be like a child's drawing propaganda almost.
I get that.
Awesome.
that's wild. So did you think, like, I want to make an album that is specifically about the loss of innocence? And I'm sure that I wouldn't ask you to, like, punch out, like, a definite chronology of this. But did you think, I want to make an album about the America's loss of innocence following 9/11 and the subsequent, you know, everybody falling into an internet hellhole, and then you found that image? Or did you see that image and think, I should make an album about the general feeling?
The feeling that I had when I made that album is I wouldn't make an album about America's downfall.
Yeah, for sure.
After say that image, you know, because like that's what that image said to me. You know, this is, you know, end of America, right?
Yes. Yeah.
It feels very apocalyptic almost. In a childish way.
Yeah.
Like. Definitely. And so thinking of like what had brought upon this sort of like feeling of dread in America was probably 9/11, you know, as the sort of catalyst for a lot of things that have happened in the past 20 years.
Definitely.
And so if I remember correctly, that's pretty much how that concept came about.
Huh.
As I think at that point, I think a couple other artists had already tackled 9/11. I'm thinking if they could do it, and think it's like, I wanted to put my own spin on 9/11.
Yeah, for sure.
Do like one of those, you know, those recuts of a movie commercial, make a comedy or horror film sort of thing.
Yeah,
you know?
Totally.
All these other albums are very much like nostalgic for the time before 9/11, but not really looking at the aftermath and the effects of 9/11, which I feel is a lot more potent to work with.
More interesting, you know.
Yeah.
Yes. In my opinion.
Yeah, because I guess now that you mention it, I was racking my brain for like, are there other 9/11 themed albums? But
oh yeah, there's
within the vaporwave community, obviously there's no shortage.
Well, I mean, like, use the Bruce Springsteen album, The Rising. There's the quote unquote that one album that's the loops. What was it? The
Disintegration Loops.
I mean, it's not really about 9/11. She kind of like barked it around that.
Yeah, for sure.
But, you know.
He was making those loops during 9/11. This is the crazy thing. And he was in New York City. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was wild. And then Cat Court news at 11. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the big one, which, to be honest, I think it's, I don't particularly get why it has as much of a following as it does. I think it's because it's classic vaporwave. It's Cat Corp, who's, he's since proved himself, I think, since like around that time when he put out that album, because like at that point he was still just starting to pop off, and I think now he's like he's not just a gimmick anymore. But well, at the time I was just like, oh, this is just boring.
Well, if I remember, like when that album came out, isn't it not on Cat Corp's Bandcamp? Like it's just, it has a separate Bandcamp. So was it known that it was Cat Corp?
I don't remember now that I think of it.
Yeah, I don't know. But it got really big, yeah. They did
it got super big.
We shitted on it because they did a cassette release like for the 20th anniversary of 9/11.
I thought it was a little tone deaf. I don't know. That's the other thing. I intentionally didn't release it on. I put it on September 10th. You know, a little better, but you know, yeah. But like I intentionally wanted it to be as. I like the album is a warning of sorts. You know, it's a very simple, like, you know, you're doomed to repeat if you forget, you know, your history or like what have you.
Yeah.
So, for sure. Like, and then it ends with, you know, it's just another Tuesday that anything could happen, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, was that a take that you had, Triton, that Gen Z people don't remember 9/11 and they have now become nostalgic for and romanticize?
They definitely romanticize it.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just like how I romanticized like when I was a little bit younger, and still to some extent, like the 80s and the sort of like aesthetic of the 80s. I grew up in 19, I was born in 1993. I don't remember the 80s because I was alive.
Yeah.
But like, it's that sort of feeling.
Yeah. But instead of like funny hairdos and like leg warmers, the thing that's romanticized is 9/11.
Pre 9/11.
I you can go both on that.
Yeah.
Pre 9/11 and 9/11, you know.
Yeah.
And post. Yeah. And, yeah. Why not?
Well, the thing is, like, I remember when I was in middle school. We had a project, and somehow I picked 9/11 as the topic or whatever.
Nice.
So it is part of the reason why I knew as much as I did about it, because like I would go on to the archive of all like the newscasts the time, and it's really haunting. It really is.
Yeah.
When I was at the tail end of finishing up the album, the winter before, winter 2017, 2016.
Yeah.
So the year before NAMM came out, right? I went to the museum, and it's really hard to get through.
Yeah,
it's really kind of at that point I was like, what am I doing? Am I really making this sound about 9/11? You know, it's just really.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I talk myself down it's been, clearly, but you know.
It's been weird to like, yeah, it is weird to have been the age like that I was, and that I guess we were the like when it happened, and then like.
It would have been, we would have been the very last people to really remember that. I was in New Jersey. You know, I grew up in New Jersey, so I remember that morning because it was like one of the first days of school back at school, and then like all of a sudden we're on the buses heading back home.
Yeah,
and my dad would sometimes, thankfully not that day, would work in New York at the MetLife building downtown, and but you know, thankfully this again wasn't one of the weeks that he was down there. But like sometimes he'd be down there, it could have just been, you know. It was just the sort of uncertainty. And I just remember turning on the TV And most of the stations, since I was in New Jersey, were on the World Trade Center. So most of the stations weren't on. Most stations were down. I didn't have cable. So, because I just wanted to watch my, because I'm a kid.
I wanted to watch after school cartoons and stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, for sure.
And so I turned the TV and like, there's like static, and then there's like something going on the channel. I skip it. They're like, why are there no kid shows on? I was so mad.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. That was 9/11. Damn.
Yeah. That was 9/11 as I remember it.
Yeah. For sure. Well, that's fucked up.
Yeah. We've been going for over an hour now. I guess, is there anything like, is there anything like that you felt like you haven't said about the album that you wanted to get out there?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I don't really think so, to be honest. It's an album about, you know, not about like second chances. It sounds weird. It's an album about, you know, our time here is short, right?
Yeah.
And we don't know when we're gonna go or where our loved ones will go.
For sure.
So, you know, really try to, like, I'm really trying to put a hopeful spin on this because it's really kind of a downer of an album.
Well, I think that like to get back to your point about like you liking music that has an ambivalence to it, and that is kind of like there's a positiveness to it, but if you listen close, you can find an underlying sense of dread.
Yes.
I think like that last track, like Walk the Earth, is a really great, I don't know, like example of that. Like while I was listening to it, like is very beautiful. But at the same time, like I just think it's really interesting. Like when I listen to it, I think like, what is the singer talking about? Like what's walking the earth again? Who is walking the earth? Like the people who went to purgatory, or this guy that didn't get into purgatory that's like doomed to walk the earth? Like, is it? And it's like, it's at the end of the, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but it's at the end of the hell sequence. So like, is it a guy that got out of hell and he's walking the earth? Like he's escaped hell? Or is it a guy that's now doomed to walk the earth because he didn't get into heaven? So yeah, I do think that there's like a hint of hope at the end, but it's also very ambivalent for sure.
I'll leave you in that. You know, I'll leave you with thinking that, because that's not necessarily what I was thinking.
Really?
Word.
I'm gonna regret saying this. Because like it sort of ruins it for some people who like listen to it hear like a hopeful ending, but it's after the segment of hell. I've seen it as a yearning to go back to you know the way things were, and it's this, and the reason why it falls out of sync is because you know it comes back, but the problem is it comes back at the very end to you know sync back up that you're never getting out of here, that this is the end, that you know it's. That's how I envisioned it. It's, but if you want to think it's, you know,
I'm gonna choose to retain like a little note of hope.
Well, like you said at the beginning, it's the world's album now. You put it out there, so
exactly.
Yeah. Well, word. Yeah, that's a pretty beautiful spot to end it, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you have any like plugs or anybody you want to shout out or anything? Again, thank you so much for coming on. Again, like we're big fans. We love your shit.
Yes. Yeah.
Hey, definitely. No problem. AOL vinyl still available. That's a running gag at this point. but the album's out. AD is out on streaming services. It's on Bandcamp. You can still on YouTube. And you can still, it's free download, but if you want to pay for it, don't be my guest. Right. And I guess shout out to 3D Blast, because he said to say hi. So hi guys.
Oh, hello.
3D Blast. I said that earlier, but whatever.
Word. Right. What's up, 3D Blast? Yeah, hell yeah.
Business Casual's pretty cool, so you should buy tapes from them and not anybody else, because they're like the cool Funko Pops.
They are. They are the best version of Funko Pops. Yeah, they get our official SlimeWire endorsement, and you can look forward to receiving the SlimeWire bump, is what it's called.
The SlimeWire bump.
Yeah, hey, after somebody goes on our show, that usually...
You know, Joe Rogan's got nothing on you guys.
Absolutely.
Hell yeah. Thanks. Well, so at the end of the show, we say sayonara.
Yes, we usually say sayonara. Feel free to not, though.
Well, you should.
Do I say it together?
No, I say sayonara, and then Ikemen Sensei says...
Sayonara.
And then Christ can say...
Sayonara! Goodbye, guys! Toodaloo! All right, ta-ta!
All right. Yeah, Word. Again, thank you so much for doing this, man.
Yeah, it was great.
No problem.
Yeah. And we'll let you get to bed now.
I'm not going to bed anytime soon at this point.
Nice.
All right.
Never log off.
Okay. Yes. Well, yeah, I have to end the recording so that my computer can handle it. All right.
Oh, Word.
Peace, guys.
Okay. Yeah, see ya. Can I end it now?
Yeah.
be